podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hi everybody, this is the Cricket Badger podcast.
Each badger marks the track with its own scent.
His black legs are short but very powerful for digging. The name badger probably comes from the French word bêcher, meaning digger.
And hello everybody, welcome along. It is another edition of the Cricket Badger podcast. Very good to see everybody out there. And the Cricket World Cup, it's finally woken up, hasn't it? We've had a close game today and a good game. Unless you're a Pakistan fan, because Afghanistan doing the job over Pakistan. And the World Cup starting to just build up to a crescendo. If it carries on like this and the games gradually get better, by the end of it, we'll have forgotten all the dull games at the start and everybody will be a little excited. But pleased to say, Neil and Anand are back with me and are happy to welcome back to the Cricket Badger podcast. It's been a while since you've been on this. Azim Rafiq, hello.
Hi, mate. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Whatever happened to that podcast that we did ages ago? I can't remember. It could die to death, didn't it? But good to see you. And we'll start with you. Have you watched Pakistan's defeat today?
Yeah, I've watched bits and bobs of it. I didn't get to watch the whole game because I was flying overnight. But yeah, it's the same story, isn't it? Pakistan doing what Pakistan exactly does. To be honest, I don't think it's any surprise. The players have looked short of, you know, I think they've looked done for a few weeks now. The Asia Cup started really well and it felt like, you know, with the three pace bowlers, Pakistan might, you know, challenge a few teams, and yeah, injuries, couple of injuries, and it's all unravelled very quickly and very disappointing there.
Always said about Pakistan, and it still remains true. They, on their day, they can beat anybody in the world, can't they? And on their day, they can lose to anybody in the world. And today was one of the latter ones.
Yeah, it's just, you know, frustrating to watch because you could see this coming, you know. I think if we're being brutally honest, Babar's the only world-class player in the team. Yes, there are other players that are good players who have performed well at different stages over the last few years. But Babar's the only world-class player. But even with that, it's Pakistan's bowling that generally, you know, when they win, when they're not expected to, it's generally the bowling that does it. I think Nasim Shah's been a big loss. Shaheen looks tired and
Harris Rauf, look something else. Azim's just frozen for a second. We'll come on to Neil and Anand, two Indian supporters on the podcast. I guess you're really reveling in the fact that Pakistan got beaten today, aren't you? Who's going to start us off?
I can go. So for me, I actually wanted Pakistan to win for a primary reason that I think it makes the competition even more closer, right? The last few matches, everything's going to be all bunched up and, you know, you don't know who's going to make the semis. But in some ways, you also look at Afghanistan and say, okay, they beat England the other day and today they beat Pakistan. And it wasn't, we didn't get the feeling that they were, that this was a fluke, right? They looked in control throughout the match, whether it was bowling, batting or fielding. So yeah, I think for me, I was rooting for Pakistan, but it's really good to see Afghanistan win.
Indian fan admits to rooting for Pakistan live on the Cricket Badger podcast. Seven matches prior to this, though, Anand. Pakistan had won all seven ODIs. So Afghanistan have chosen a very big day, haven't they, to actually break that duck and get that win over Pakistan.
They did amazing. I mean, first the first thing they did was they got in four spinners, right? And you look at it, where are we playing? We're playing in Chepauk. The ball is going to spin. It's India. It's where, you know, Dhoni has established his empire there. You know the ball's going to spin. They did a great job in picking the fourth spinner. And who did he get out? He got Babar, best batsman in Pakistan. He got Shafiq,
yeah,
who's been the informed batsman in Pakistan. I think a great find. And then, what do you get else? Rizwan, right?
You got Rizwan. He got the big three, really, didn't he, in the World Cup today?
That's amazing what Noor did. And, you know, for a kid who's, what, 20, I think? You know, really amazing. And I think they got the tactics spot on. And the other part was they didn't panic. I mean, 280 is still a decent score, right? You could argue that maybe Pakistan could have got 20, 30 more, but 280 is a decent score and they didn't panic. I mean, Zadran did amazing. Gurbaz did amazing. And, you know, even after that, they just kept going and kept their wits about it. So I think this is really the blossoming of a team coming good. And we knew that Afghanistan could pull an upset or two. especially in Indian conditions. They play in India awful lot. You know, Dehradun is one of their grounds that they play all the time in. So it's really amazing, and I hope that they continue on from there. I feel really happy for the country and what they've done, and certainly for their fans. I think there was a lot of joy today, so it was amazing to watch.
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic, and the celebrations afterwards, understandably, they were very happy with life, weren't they, the Afghan players? And Neil, we were talking just before these two joiners, and before we went live, that it was a slightly different Afghanistan today, wasn't it? They kind of shoot from the hip a little bit. They kind of get overexcited sometimes. But today was a very mature chase, and they did the job.
Yeah, I mean, a typical Afghanistan batting innings would be like the one against England. You know, Gurbaz goes off an absolute flyer. Then they lose wickets in a silly way, and someone kind of sticks around to hold it together, and you get some cameos from the likes of Rashid. Today, it was clinical. They were calm all the way through. They were up with the run rates. I mean, all right, certainly at the beginning, the Pakistan seamers missed their marks and they cashed in. But it was really, really mature, and it was clinical. And it had the fingerprints of Jonathan Trott. That was the sort of innings that he would play when he was playing really good ODI cricket in the early 2010s. You know, the greatest praise I can say is that the way they managed that chase is a way that Virat would have been proud of.
Have to bring it back to India, don't you?
it was superbly managed. And, you know, usually we see, you know, a big rush of blood to the head, but that was just really, really superb, because I thought Pakistan were maybe 20 over par. That looked a tough deck, and there was a bit of ifty mania at the end to get them up to that score. Hats off. It was superb.
Every team comes into this tournament, we've said this before on this podcast, Azeem, that they come in with like a ceiling of expectation. Afghanistan with two wins have pretty much ticked the boxes. Everything from here really for Afghanistan is a bonus, isn't it?
Well, I don't know, because, you know, you talk about Noor Ahmed and, you know, he's played a lot of franchise cricket, you know, well in demand. You know, their players have been getting experiences and been quietly improving in the background, I think. So I don't know. You know, I'm a little bit excited for what Afghanistan can do for the rest of this tournament. I really am, because I think today was, you know, today showed a team growing together. And, you know, what a sight that would be at a time where, I don't know for what reason, but it's probably the only sport that wants to, you know, get smaller to grow. It would be another message to the ICC and the cricket administrators that we need, you know, teams like Afghanistan and Netherlands, given the opportunity and the resources, can compete. So, no, I think they'd have quietly bigger expectations than that.
I mean, you mentioned Netherlands there. I've been delighted with them. They've been brilliant. They are a strong unit. They are together. They fight for each other. They're well prepared. And they are flying the flag for the Associate Nations, and they're flying it high and proud, aren't they?
Yeah, I think, look, associate teams have always, you know, generally given a good account of themselves. You know, you've got to put it into context of the lack of resource these teams and countries have. And, you know, not just from a financial point of view, other teams just don't play them, and you don't get better without playing. So they have to find other ways to get better, and they seem to be doing that. You know, innovative coaching and, you know, team together. So I think, again, it's been great to watch.
The three teams that seem to be taking it on at the moment that look to be destined for the semi-finals are India, New Zealand and South Africa. If they carry on playing the same way, it'd be a surprise if those three didn't get to the semi-finals. The way the rest of the table's bunched up and the way the other teams are playing, they're taking points off each other. We've been saying all the way through this World Cup that three defeats is probably the maximum you could have. But I've been looking at it today, and we're going to work through the remaining fixtures as we go through to work out who might make the semi-finals. But there is a chance, Azeem, that maybe even four defeats and you could sneak through on net run rate. So Afghanistan, Netherlands, you never know, do you? Could they get to the semi-finals? Could they be a surprise package?
I'll just say one thing about New Zealand, because, you know, everyone's saying, you know, four wins in a run, they've only lost to India, and they push them quite hard. But they've got to face England, Australia and Pakistan and Sri Lanka, who we've seen have got a really explosive batting lineup. They're just really unfortunate that, you know, three or four of their best bowlers have been injured coming into this tournament. So on the right deck, then they could, batting first, they could really put them put New Zealand in a tough position. That's a hard run of four. So I'd expect them to go through, but I wouldn't be surprised if they properly had to wrestle for it, because they're playing big teams. Australia have already played South Africa. They've already played Pakistan. They've already played India. So they've got England, who, you know, goodness knows what's going to happen. You know, maybe the whole squad's going to go home and Zach Rawley's team's going to come out for the rest of the tournament. but they're going to, you know, come out fighting because they're backs to the walls, or they're just going to collapse. You know, 2019, backs to the walls. 2013, Ashes, just complete collapse and fiasco. Could go either way for them. So I'm not completely sold on New Zealand just because the run in yet. I think they'll scrape it. But I think Australia and, Australia's run in is looking pretty good. And South Africa and India have just looked really impressive.
Badgers are furry creatures. 85% of women badgers think bad grooming is a major turn-off. 80% of women badgers think men should trim below the belt. 89% of men think good grooming is essential to their professional success. Don't just dismiss it out of hand. Get on there, manscaped.com. Check out their great range of male grooming accessories. Hygiene, appearance, attractiveness, confidence. Simply go to manscaped.com, quote the discount code BADGER. You get 20% off, you get free shipping, and you get some seriously quality equipment. Manscaped.com. Together, we save balls. It's actually really fascinatingly poised. As I say, we'll go through the remaining games at the end of this and work out who we think's going to make the semi-finals. But let's move on to India. Before I come to the two Indian fans on the podcast, let's go to Azeem. India have looked like the Rolls Royce of this competition so far. 5 wins from 5 matches, 10 points on the board. They look as if they're going to coast through top of the table. Who can stop them is the first question. And B, is it going to be the same old India? Get to the semi-finals, put in their one bad performance and miss out?
Yeah, I think only India can stop themselves. I think they've got it absolutely spot on, all bases covered, home advantage. They started, the Asia Cup, they started off a bit slow, and then they just started to pick momentum, and you could just see the wheels turning. And, you know, now they've got the spinners bowling well, the seamers, Bumrah's back, Rohit, and, you know, the GOAT Virat is in top form. So I honestly think India needs to hope for a bad day before the semi-final. Just get a bad day out of the way. And I don't see anyone stopping them at this stage, to be honest.
I'll tell you, Neil claimed their bad day earlier on in the tournament when they were 2 for 3 at one stage. But we're not having that. There's going to be a worse day than that to come. And somebody said to me on the WhatsApp group the other day, I really hope India have that bad day in the semi-final, and wipes a smile off their face. But is it going to happen, Anand? Is there a bad day around the corner? Are your smiles going to be taken off those faces?
I don't see it primarily because it's in India. And if you look at that bowling attack, each and every one of them can get you wickets. They're not defensive bowlers. I mean, arguably Jadeja outside of India, but really in India, he's a weapon, right? So in Jadeja and Kuldeep for spin. And when you add Bumrah, he has been absolutely phenomenal this whole tournament. Siraj, I know, has gone for a few runs, but he's aggressive. He's going to bowl full length. He might get tonged for a bit, but he'll take a few wickets, right? And then Shami, who came in for that one game, right, and showed what he could do. And Ashwin's still in the wing if it's spinning. So I think, you know, the bowling attack's there. And from a batting standpoint, everybody who should be in form is in form. I think arguably you could say maybe Shreyas Iyer has not put in a big inning, and maybe Gill hasn't. But again, you know, Gill just recovered from dengue. So, you know, let's give him a couple of games maybe. But, you know, I think India is good, and I don't anticipate issues with semifinals as well, because these are conditions they grew up playing in.
The four people that have generally been sitting out for India, Surikumi Yadav, wasn't it? Mohammed Shami, who proved, as you say, with the wickets in the last match. You've had, who else is there? Ravi Ashwin and...
Ishan Kishan.
They, all four of those, would walk into any other of the teams in the tournament, wouldn't they? As individual players. The strength in that squad is enormous.
Ashwin's played one game. Tell me right now, would Pakistan not trade him for Nawaz or... I mean, Iftikhar is the best spinner. Ashwin would walk in and play each game in the Pakistan team right now, right? And he arguably could probably do that for Australia, definitely England as well. So I would think he would walk into majority side. Maybe not Afghanistan because they already have enough spinners. But look at that. I mean, and that's just one person. I think Shami would do the same thing.
He'd be batting four for Afghanistan. That's how he gets in the team.
Yeah, I mean, it's just ridiculously strong, isn't it? And it's hard to see them being derailed. I mean, New Zealand probably gave them the best game of the tournament so far, Neil, and kind of ran them close. But it always looked like India had enough, didn't it?
I don't know. I mean, I watched that, and we had a bad day in the field. And I think there is a little bit of a caveat that, you know, the Dharmashala outfield is bordering on dangerous.
Well, nobody was prepared to dive on it, were they?
Yeah, either side. But we dropped catches. I mean, Jadeja dropped a catch, and then, you know, Ravindra goes and scores another 50 on the top of that, puts on 150 with Mitchell. But it's the best put together squad in the tournament, and certainly I think for India the best put together squad I've ever seen for a World Cup, because we do seem to be prepared for any type of conditions that we'll face in India, be it seam heavy or spin heavy or having to go batting heavy. You know, even the Lord, you know, a great game is where the Lord is in the team but he doesn't have to bowl because everyone else is doing fine. He doesn't have to bat because the game's done before it gets to him. But he gives that option and that security to the other batters so they don't have to do what Dhoni did and, you know, go really defensive because he doesn't trust anyone.
I love how you just call him the Lord. Like, everybody knows that Shardul Thakur is called the Lord. But anyway, he's kind of like coasting through this tournament without really doing anything. Like you say, he's the Mark Chapman of India, isn't he?
It's break the glass in case of emergency. You really hope you don't have to use him. But, but you know, he'll get a couple of overs in at like sort of 11, 12, 13. And then we've got that little bit of safety net if someone is going. You know, Kuldeep wouldn't have had to bowl his 10 yesterday if Shardul was playing, even though he came back really well in the back five. But Rohit didn't have that option at all, which meant that Mitchell could really go after him as the one guy that they identified that they'd attack. So he doesn't do as much himself, but he provides that flexibility from a tactical perspective that I think works really well, and also gives more confidence for people to go for their shots higher up the batting order.
If I was to put you in charge of Pakistan cricket, Azeem, which of the Indian players would you take?
All of them. Honestly, you know, when Anand was talking about the spinners there and earlier I got cut off, I think that's the most disappointing thing from a... When can you remember a Pakistan team where your spinners have been performing so poorly and look so out of every... You know, they just don't look like they can keep the runs down.
I thought that because I was commentating on that game today, and Afghanistan spinners in the middle overs when Pakistan were batting were basically stifling the runs. They bowled really well. The youngster on his Cricket World Cup debut, Rashid Khan, didn't take a wicket, but he was miserly. They were brilliant. And then, so I was looking for the Pakistan spinners to do the same to Afghanistan, and they just couldn't do it, could they?
Yeah, and it's been happening for a while. And it's, you know, I think Babar struggled with captaining them, but I think their mindsets are so defensive. They don't look like trying to take wickets. But, you know, I think if you ever get a chance to pick an Indian player for your team, it's always got to be Virat Kohli, hasn't it? Master chaser, just an outstanding cricketer. A goat.
Myself and Anand, Mumbai Indians fans, we'd probably take Jasprit Bumrah, wouldn't we?
I would have totally gone with Jasprit Bumrah. I think he fits into every team. He's a class bowler. However, I would say this, Pakistan does not need a pacer as much as they need a spinner. So I do agree with Azeem there. You know, Afridi has been a little off color, but Shaheen is a fantastic bowler. And, you know, losing Naseem early was you know, certainly, and it shows right now, it's been such a huge loss. I mean, Hasan Ali has bowled fine, but man, Naseem is something else. So
after Harris Rowe's first over today went for 17 and he was expensive at the start of the other day, he seemed desperate to try and get the most expensive ODI analysis of all time, but he didn't have enough overs to spare last time. He only could manage 8, so he never actually threatened the record, but he's been
That's one of my biggest frustrations with the whole Mickey Arthur thing, because, you know, these guys, there's a World Cup coming. They played the Sri Lankan Premier League. They've played literally everywhere, played every game possible, and there's just been no planning. And, you know, I'm just not having that. A director of cricket has not been able to workload plan. He's only been around for 8 months for a World Cup. And, you know, apparently he picked up the niggle in Sri Lanka and then carried on playing in the Asia Cup when, you know, no one's going to remember who won the Asia Cup. And that's where my biggest frustration with this Mickey Arthur, you know, situation, because Pakistan did it before with Misbah and tried to innovate and made him the selector, the head of everything, and just one person dealing with everything. That backfired. And now we've got a coach sat in Derby 3 weeks before a World Cup, you know, while we're playing in the Asia Cup. I just think that that's why my frustration comes, Neil, around Mickey Arthur.
Well, I was going to ask about that, Azeem, because I remember Mohammed Amir maybe, what, 4 or 5 years ago, basically being played every single game, all three formats, until his knee cartilage was just dust. Doesn't the requirement to play your best team in every single game, doesn't that predate Mickey Arthur? And it's just that he doesn't have the political capital to overrule some of the higher-ups? But definitely a problem. They're gassed, aren't they?
I mean, I think the culture is one where players are very scared to have a day off just in case they don't get back in the team because of the political, you know, angles of the team. But, you know, you're a director of cricket, getting, you know, paid really well. I just don't see, you know, just as I said to you on Twitter, imagine Rob Key coaching a side in Pakistan domestic while England are having the New Zealand series. You know, I think it's absolutely absurd. And I think I'm frustrated that someone like Mickey's even taking that on. But, you know, that's where cricket just lets itself down. But I do agree with you. There is, with Pakistan cricket, you know, they're still very much living in the dark ages. You know, I in the last few years, I've seen it a little bit close quarters. The medical department, you know, just completely way off the mark. You know, a science way off the mark. Trying to catch up around data, you know.
I do love Mickey Arthur, though. As soon as something goes wrong on the pitch, they pan across to Mickey Arthur, who's kicking something, he's ripping something up, he's doing something, he's looking grumpy. He's the best reactor in world cricket, Mickey Arthur, because he had plenty to moan about today, and boy, was he moaning on the sidelines.
You are listening to the Cricket Badger Podcast.
Let's move on to England. I mean, we could do 10 podcasts on this. What is wrong with England's team? The 100 in the middle of the season. They've marginalised the 50-over competition to almost a second 11 domestic thing behind the 100. They've been complacent. They've played only a handful of, 20-something games or something in ODI cricket since the 2019 World Cup. And most of those games, they've not played their first team. They have, I mean, you can feel a bit sorry for Joss Butler, but Joss Butler's got the face on him of the person that was at the end of his test career at the moment. He's walking around looking grumpy and miserable. I don't see how that motivates players. I don't see how he doesn't strike me as the sort of player that goes into a dressing room and raises spirits when he's walking around looking as grumpy as he is doing. What does Matthew Mott do? I don't think I've ever heard him speak. Where are England going? What's happening? Is it the end of the world, Neil?
England have got what they deserved here, because they haven't shown the respect to the format that it deserves. They haven't bothered to play it, either at an international level where they've played about half of the games of India and a lot of the other nations since the last World Cup. They've completely sidelined it at domestic level. They believe that T20 performances and attitudes, and I'll include the 100 in that, completely translate. I mean, we saw the huge arguments for between the Harry Brook and Dawid Malan, and in the end it was both and lose Jason Roy earlier on. But all they could, but they were putting a single century in a domestic T20 competition against four ODI 100s in varied conditions, in really tough situations in Bangladesh and in Australia, Dawid Malan, and they were discounting it completely. They haven't invested in the format and in the same way. And to me, the way that they're looking at the 50-over format is closer to all the World Cups prior to 2019, when they spent 4 years with a laser focus, meticulous planning from Bayliss and Morgan and the people at the ECB working towards it. You know, they'd play loads of ODIs, they'd tinker with the team, they'd give people a chance and then either back them or discard them. And they ended up with a really honed unit when they came into that World Cup, so that even when they lost a few games to Pakistan, to Sri Lanka, to Australia, they still had complete confidence in the way that they did things. Butler's just all over the shop. And there's a chemocracy, which there has been in English cricket at the top level in terms of choosing players. You know, he actually came out and said, we're going to back Chris Wokes because he's a class guy at one point after the Afghanistan game. And I was like, well, yeah, no one doubts that Chris Wokes is maybe the nicest guy in cricket. Doesn't get you in the first 11. Well,
on that basis, Neil, you'd have had 100 test caps, wouldn't you? Because you're a nice guy. I mean, Gus Atkinson's interesting because Gus Atkinson's undoubtedly got talent. He's obviously...
Two innings he played for England.
Exactly. I mean, he's got no experience of 50-over cricket coming into a Cricket World Cup. He sat there and watched from the sidelines for three games and then you throw him in. It's hardly fair on him, is it, Azeem, to kind of just... Take a lad that's not got really any experience at that level and just chuck him into the cauldron and expect him to swim.
Yeah, I think there's two things with England. One, you know, incredibly spoilt for a period of time under Owen Morgan, and it's gone straight back, you know, it's gone very much quickly back to how it was. And I think the lack of respect and clarity with Owen Morgan's team, you just knew there was so much clarity around personnel, around the style of play. You know, there was times that, you know, people would be screaming and saying, no, no, no. But Owen Morgan was steadfast with his body language and with his words. And that, you know, you could see that throughout the team. I think from the minute that they left Brooke out, they've just been rabbiting the headlights. And you can go back, you can start England's demise as wherever you want. You can go 2019 and then, lack of respect for the fall.
As you freeze, I'll ask you another question as a supplement because you'll hear it and you'll be back by the time I finish this question. But I just don't get how you can be as complacent and as almost as arrogant as England have been, and that they just seem to have the attitude that they know how to play T20. They've got enough experience. They've got World Cup winners in that squad. So they're just going to be able to rock up and it's going to be okay.
Well, I think, again, you know, you can go back wherever you want, even the appointment of Matthew Mott. You know, no one to this day knows what he does. And I think, you know, his interview yesterday was uncomfortable viewing. And I think you're right in that, you know, I think they've had this blasé, attitude that we'll just turn up and we'll just bat in an attacking manner and win the game. I think the frustrating thing watching them in the world is how timid they've been. Mm. And this is where I think leaving out Jason Roy, Jason Roy did more than just the runs. I think for me, the way he batted for England selflessly, whether it was in form or not, took the attack to the opposition, and it scared captains and they scared bowlers, and it created a lot. And for me, I know people, the stats will say otherwise, and there's a lot of Milan fans. For me, Milan and Root can't play in the same team. I think we've swapped messages on this a few times, James. It just changes the style of the outlook of the England team. Even early on in the Morgan era, it wasn't the bowling. You know, they always, whatever runs they got, 370, the other team used to get close. Mm. It was the out-and-out attack, brutal. And that's where the selection the other day was just bonkers. I mean, completely just changed the style of approach, which shows rabbit in headlights in thinking. And it comes right from the top. I think it comes right from when Brooke was left out. Once he was left out, there was no way he should have been picked back in, because, and it would have shown, you know, we know what we're doing. And all they've shown throughout this last few months is that they don't know what they're doing. And that comes from the lack of respect.
I think there's two types of leader. I think some people, Pep Guardiola is a good example at Man City. Terrific manager in a Rolls Royce of a team where he's got investment money. And there's a big, it's not an easy task to maintain excellence and to keep Man City at the very, very top of the game. That's a task in itself. And he does that very well. And you can get captains of cricket teams where the captain's got all of the tools, he's got all of the players. There's a lot of chats, obviously, off the park. A lot of T20 field placings are decided before you get out there, aren't they? You're not kind of reacting whilst you're on the park. I think Joss Butler's in that kind of category as a captain. I think Ben Stokes and a few others are in the category of a person that can walk into a dressing room and lift it and actually tell people they're better than they are and get people to actually fight. I'll follow you through that brick wall. I don't think Joss Butler is that, Azeem. Am I wrong?
I think Joss, look, obviously, I'm a little bit biased here.
You played with him at England under 19 level, didn't you? So I'm actually probably slagging off one of your friends there.
Well, no, it's, I mean, look, I've not spoken to Joss for a very long time. I'm just as a character, I think that's a bit harsh. Personally, I think he's been let down. I think he's given the vibes of Joe Root at the end of his test captaincy. But I, you know, there's been no support. You know, they've not had the best team. They've had no, and I think the coach is clearly, not adding a lot. And I don't know how much this has played, but how well the test team has done and having Stokesy around, whether that has, weighed down on Joss a little bit. But, you know, I've picked up body language of some of the other players and some of the senior players and having, you know, shared a dressing room with some of them. I looking at Johnny and body language, I think the senior players have all been like very not interested. And it's been very much, you know, going into this tournament, they've been dealing about central contracts. There's a lot of riches at play. And I feel like the England players are not really that interested in actually genuinely playing for England anymore.
Anand, let's come to you on England. Anything to add to what's been said already?
I would like to refute all the points made here. What are we talking about? Have you looked at the number of ODIs played by all teams from 2019
to 2022? Just before you carry on, Anand, explain to Azeem that of everybody on this podcast, we're all doom and gloom about England. Anand, sitting in America as an Indian fan, he's positive about England.
It's mad. Well, let's bring up a couple of things, right? Nobody's playing ODIs. You know, England played 42 ODIs between 2019 and 2023. So after the World Cup in 2019, the first ODI that England played was in 2020. And then they played 42 overall ODIs. How many has South Africa played?
I'll come back at you. Maybe South Africa and some of these other countries that have played only a few ODIs have actually taken those seriously and played their first team and actually used them as genuine preparation for a big tournament that's coming up in a couple of years' time. England, I mean, Ireland, just at the end of the summer, they played the Lions effectively in that series. What was the point of that? That's three of your ODIs there that meant nothing in terms of preparation for this Cricket World Cup. They travelled abroad to, was it Bangladesh? And they played a B team there. They count in the number of ODIs played in the last 4 years. None of Root, Butler, etc. were playing in that side. They were pointless ODIs.
I think it's more the attitude, from the moment of the appointment, oh, you know what, we're fine in white ball cricket. We're just going to, Matthew Mott's just going to transition us into, you know, continuously win. And I think, you know, the disrespect, international players don't actually play a lot of domestic cricket. So it's not about, this is not from a 100 point of view at all, actually. For me, I actually don't think that with the riches that some of the players can attract now, I actually don't think that they have any interest in playing this format. And, you know, some of the fringe players have shown that as well by picking some of the T20 leagues. Nothing against the players, but that's going to catch up on you because 50 over cricket is actually very, very different to T20. And, there's acute strategies and skills.
I don't think we're going to be playing 50 over cricket for very much longer at international level, I have to say.
Eight more years at least. They've got the next two World Cups in, and they're selling the rights. I think when people say that, and I saw George had written an article, which I haven't had a chance to read yet, saying that they're discussing it. What we forget is that every single country, apart from maybe three or four, is reliant on ICC revenue distribution to break even. Now, that ICC revenue distribution is all the money from the TV rights for the ICC tournament, the majority of which is the TV and digital rights for the Indian region. You get 8 hours of advertising. And some people have shown screenshots of the domestic Star Sports broadcast, where they've actually got like advertising banners along the left-hand side and at the bottom. And then you've got the screen in a cutout box. The advertising is massive. And without that level of something else coming in with that level of revenue, then I know that most people don't care about the 90 other sides that can only play T20s and ODIs and aren't allowed to play Red Bull, but they'll go under. So I don't, for all the, you know, the ECB don't care about 50 overs because it's you know, is going in the way of their own domestic competition, there's a long way before the international community can get rid of the format unless they replace it with something of equal revenue.
I don't think they can they, Neil?
It could become a 40 over, though, couldn't it? They could change, they could adapt an ODI.
What's special about 40 overs? You're just essentially talking about two T20s, right? I think you look at the format and say, what else can we do to make it a bit more exciting? Can you use the two balls tactically? Like one side, you know, we use two new balls right now. Can we then use one ball, you know, at the start and then use the second ball later? You know, there are tactics that can be added in there. Super subs can be looked at. There are things that can be done to make this exciting. I think that looking at making it 40 overs just reduces it, but it's essentially two T20s. And, you know, what's the point of that?
As you all know, I'm a forward thinker. You all know that I'm a genius, and I think ahead, and my thoughts change cricket. I was watching them hitting sixes the other day, and you know they have the apex thing, and they measure each six. Why, there's going to come a time, isn't there, where if somebody hits a 70-meter six, it's going to be worth a bit less than an 80-meter six, and you get more for a 100-meter six. You get bonus points depending on how far you hit it. It's coming, isn't it?
It's like those factory games, isn't it? If you get it in this hole, then it's worth more points. And just to come back on your point, it's an English concept already because, as Azim will know, didn't the domestic competition go to 40 overs for about 10 years? And it was a big reason that, you know, the England, I was listening to a pod with either Will McPherson or possibly Matt Roller that Jared Kimber did about how that informed the England aggressive way of playing in 50 overs because they were used to going all out in the domestic 40 over competition. So it has been done, but you're cutting out advertising time. And at the moment, the Indian market is there. Whatever they say about people in the stadium, they're talking 40, maybe 45 million people tuned in at the same time during the India-Pakistan game. India get into the semis and the final, you're going to get a lot more. Even, I can never get the Asian decimals right, but they said that at one point today, 2 crore people were watching Afghanistan-Pakistan on a work day.
20 million.
Well. That's 20. I mean, all right, it's a team that was doing well against Pakistan, but still, that is a lot of people tuning in on a work day.
The Cricket Badger podcast is fueled by coffee. Take a look at cricketcoffeeco.com for some excellent specialty coffee for cricket badgers. Expertly roasted and ethically sourced, the coffee is fantastic. cricketcoffeeco.com, quote Badger with your order and you'll get 10% off. We're going to move on from this. I've started to actually really enjoy this World Cup. It's getting better, I think, as it goes on. But I think we should stop. Anand mentioned this on the WhatsApp group before we came on, and I think he's dead right because Bishan Bedi died today, and I think we should just have a line on him because 77 years old, but what a player. I'm old enough to be able to remember. I'm just seeing the very end of him, I think it was. 266 test wickets, 1,560 first class wickets, 7 in ODIs as they just became into being right at the end of his playing career. But let's start with you, Anand. Bishan Bedi, quite a very slow spinner, wasn't he? They wouldn't have liked him these days because he bowled too slow, but had so much control, so much about him, and genuine legend of the game.
Absolutely. So I grew up during the Tendulkar era. So it was Tendulkar, Kumbley, you know, things of such nature. But Bishan Singh Bedi's shadow cast a long shadow. Each and every spinner would still talk about going and talking to Bishan Singh Bedi. You know, all the left-armers did it, but also leg spinners. You know, Kumbley talks about how he would go to Bishan Singh and talk about his craft. And you think about Kumbley versus Bishan, right? You watch Bishan run in, there's this beautiful rhythmic run-up, and, you know, he's literally tossing that ball up, and you're seeing that dip, that spin, that guile that he would have. And Kumbley is the exact opposite of that, and he was still reaching out to him, right? I think for all of us growing up, we heard about Bishan. We might not have watched him, but we heard about him, and it was amazing. You know, when you look at his cricket record, you just mentioned 1,560 wickets. That is ridiculous. And also, if you look at his test record, he's taken wickets everywhere. I think in Australia, in finger spin in Australia, we know apart from Lyon, who's really done well. I think Bishan average is 28 in Australia in tests played there. It's amazing what he and the Troika of spinners that we had were able to do. And I think that really represented India, you know, after gaining independence, that sort of first steps towards asserting that, hey, we can play this game and we have a voice. And, you know, Bishan, if you look even outside of his playing days, what was he able to do? He was able to take a stand. You know, I think it was in England, right? John Lever with the Vaseline. They talk about that John Lever is putting Vaseline on the ball, and Bishan said, hey, we're not going to play if this continues to happen, right? He laid some charges on him. Bishan, I think in West Indies, there's a story where four fast bowlers were played and they started bowling a bunch of bouncers to, you know, the lower order. And Bishan said, hey, we're not going to play the test match, which at that time without helmets, you know, might not be the worst idea, but, you know, very forthright man. Had a lot of very interesting comments and was never afraid to take a stand. You know, one of the things we often see is our sports stars have a lot to lose, so they don't like to take a stand. They like to, you know, stay out of the limelight, you know, not take any controversial stances, never stand up. But that wasn't Bishan. Bishan felt very happy to exactly explain what a stance was and where he needs to go. I think this is 2 years ago when they were changing the name of Firoz Shah Kotla to Arun Jaitley. I think Bishan went out and said that, take my name off from the stands, because he was not happy with the way, you know, the Delhi cricket, DDA, whatever the cricket organization is, you know, he was not happy with the way things were going there.
You don't often get an unnaming ceremony, do you, when somebody wants to take the name off a stand?
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, he also, you know, with chucking, right? And I think, obviously, science has proven out that Murali wasn't chucking. However, one of the things that he did say was, Dusra cannot be bowled without chucking. And I think we've been proven right on that. If you're going to move your hand more than 15 degrees for the Dusra, right? Every other ball, I think it's fine.
You're starting a debate again here, Alan, that could last another 2 hours. Neil's shaking his head. Azim would love a view.
Yeah, I'm actually curious what Azim thinks.
We need to get away from that chat.
Spinner, what does he think about that? But, you know, the thing about Bishan was he wasn't afraid to take a stand. And I think, you know, from an Indian cricket standpoint, a true colossus.
Azim, before I come to Neil, as a spinner yourself and coming through, I'm sure you're aware of the name of Bishan Bedi. Sad loss today. How much did you look at other spinners from yesteryear in terms of kind of framing your frame of reference for playing? Or did you look at people currently, or did you just do it your own way?
No, absolutely. I mean, I tweeted earlier, I've never had the opportunity to meet Bishan Bedi, but, you know, watch a lot of YouTube videos, you know, his action, his run-up, just gliding. It was just beautiful. Like, you know, for me, that's what spin bowling is. So, just incredible. Yeah, sad day for, I think, the cricketing world and, you know, the Indian cricketer family as well. And all my condolences to his family.
Yeah, seconded. Neil, a genuine great. I mean, we kind of use the word great and icon and all those kind of things too much in sport, but he fits that category, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I've seen bits on YouTube and I'm probably just too young to really appreciate, you know, the spin attack of the 70s. I remember him mainly as a commentator. Like Anand said, he wasn't cowed by, you know, what it would mean politically to take a stand. If he felt something, then he would speak out about it. And, you know, especially in India at the moment, you see with the current players, and I have no, you know, I've no criticism of them doing this, but they are very, very trained. They're very media savvy. They can talk for hours without actually saying anything.
It's quite an art, that. I've sometimes done that. You interview a player and you think, oh, that was a really good interview. You go back to your laptop and you realize, yeah, I actually got anything at all, because they've said, told you absolutely nothing. Just a dead straight bat and it all comes back the other way. Yeah.
So people like him who are prepared to speak out for what they believe in, I've got utmost respect for that, and a great loss both as a player and in his post-playing days.
Yeah, Bishan Bedi, thoughts to all of his family, his friends, and a massive loss to cricket. May he rest in peace.
You are listening to the Cricket Badger podcast.
Let's finish today's podcast. We're going to go through the remaining fixtures. I've got three of you on this podcast. So there will be a verdict one way or the other in terms of one win either way. And whether it's 2-1 or 3-0, we'll find out. But we're going to go through every game. I'm going to update the table on my pad here as we go through. And we're going to find out who the top four are going to be come the end of this Cricket World Cup. So I've got the fixtures here. And we start with Bangladesh taking on South Africa tomorrow. Azeem, who wins that?
South Africa.
South Africa for you. Anand?
They're playing at 1KD. It's going to be great. South Africa is going to win this.
And Neil?
Are they at 1KD or Eden Gardens?
1KD.
So the 1KD stadium.
1KD. Okay. Oh, well, no contest. Yeah, no contest.
So a win for South Africa then. Updating the table. Next up, Australia against Netherlands. Start with you, Anand.
I think Australia is going to come out blazing. They have a chance. They know where they are at. I think Australia, you know, what have they won? Like 79 World Cups so far. So, you know, I expect them to be really aggressive.
One vote for Australia, Neil.
I'm going banana skin. I think that that Dutch
we don't
attack
need to justify everyone. There's a lot of fixtures left. we don't want to be here all night. So
yeah,
so you're going Netherlands.
Yep, Netherlands. Scott Edwards gets one over his compatriots.
All right, Azeem's got the deciding vote.
Australia.
Australia for you. Okay. Next up, England taking on Sri Lanka. Neil.
England.
Azeem.
Oh, I'm going Sri Lanka.
Oh, blimey. Azeem. And Anand.
Small ground, Bengaluru, England wins.
So that actually gives the points to England. So Azeem, you're forgiven. And we go on to Pakistan, South Africa. Azeem.
Pakistan.
Anand.
Chennai, so I guess South Africa is going to spin.
Neil?
Yeah, South Africa, better spinners.
Right, that takes South Africa to 10 points. Australia, New Zealand. Neil?
New Zealand.
Azeem?
Australia.
Anand?
Australia.
Oh, points for Australia. That could be decisive. It's like in the Eurovision Song Contest, isn't it? Bangladesh against Netherlands. Neil?
Bangladesh.
Azeem?
Bangladesh.
Well, I don't need to ask you, Anand. Who would you have gone for?
Make it 3, Bangladesh.
India against England. We'll start with you, Azeem.
This is India's bad day, England.
Ha! Anand.
It's India.
Has gone, Neil. Say England.
Nah, it's India.
So that takes India 6 out of 6. Afghanistan against Sri Lanka. Who am I going to start with, Anand?
This one's tricky. I'll go Afghanistan.
Neil?
No, I reckon Sri Lanka.
And Azeem, deciding vote on this one?
Sri Lanka.
Sri Lanka for you. All right. So Bangladesh, Pakistan, Neil.
Ooh, that one is Eden Gardens. No, I'm going Bangladesh. Home game.
Azeem.
Pakistan, Babar Azam 100.
And Anand.
Pakistan.
Oh, Pakistan just get the points. Just get the vote. New Zealand against South Africa, Azeem.
Oh, God. New Zealand.
Anand.
I'll go South Africa.
Neil.
New Zealand.
So New Zealand take the points. All right. India against Sri Lanka, Anand.
India. Neil. 1KD easy pickings.
Yeah, India.
India. India.
Right. Everybody's gone India on that one. I would have added my India vote too if I had a vote. Afghanistan against Netherlands. Start with you, Azeem.
Afghanistan
for you. Anand?
Yeah.
Would love to see Netherlands, but I think Afghanistan.
All right, that's 6 points. Onto 6 points for Afghanistan. New Zealand against Pakistan, Neil.
New Zealand.
Azeem?
Oh, Pakistan.
Anand?
Pakistan.
New Zealand.
So, all right. And then Australia against England. Azeem.
England.
Where is it?
England. That's Ahmedabad, yeah. So England for Azeem. Anand?
Australia takes it.
Neil?
Yeah, Australia.
Oh, that's England out, isn't it? That's England out. They're gone. So that takes Australia to 10 points. India against South Africa, Anand?
I'll go India, but this should be tight. Eden Gardens.
Azeem?
I think South Africa.
Neil?
Yeah, I think South Africa.
Ooh, okay.
I actually think this will be South Africa's best game in the tournament, and then they'll be done.
Right. Okay.
I think Kishan and Shami and the bench strength, Shardul will play. Yeah.
Bangladesh against Sri Lanka, Neil.
Bangladesh.
Azeem?
Sri Lanka.
Anand.
Sri Lanka.
Sri Lanka. Right, they take the win. Very tight table, this. Afghanistan against Australia. Anand.
Australia in Wankhede.
Neil.
Wankhede. Oh, Lord. Yeah, that's Australia.
All right, I don't need to ask Azim. That's another 2 points for Australia. And then we go with England, Netherlands, Azim.
No, well, if the guys have already got them out, anything could happen this day. So let Netherlands have it.
Anand.
Bairstow's going to wake up 500 on the cards in Pune.
And Neil.
Yeah, I'm going Dutch. England will have checked out already mentally.
Do you know what? If I'd had a vote, I'd have gone Netherlands in that one as well. New Zealand, Sri Lanka, Anand.
It's in Bengaluru, so New Zealand, small ground.
Neil.
Sorry, New Zealand versus who?
Sri Lanka.
Oh, yeah, that's Mendes all day.
Okay, I don't need to ask Azim. Then there's two votes for New Zealand.
No.
Sri Lanka.
I said I went Sri Lanka.
Okay.
Yeah, Mendes will go nuts.
Azim.
Bengaluru.
I'm going Sri Lanka. I think latter stages of the tournament, I think there's real chance Sri Lanka could. Even if they don't have a chance, they'll affect other people's chances.
Afghanistan, South Africa, Azim.
Afghanistan.
Anand?
South Africa.
Neil?
Yeah, South Africa.
South Africa for you. We're nearly at the end. Australia, Bangladesh. Neil?
Australia.
Azim?
Australia.
So they get the points in that one. And then we've got England, Pakistan. Azim? Hey, is that with you?
England.
Anand,
I'll go with the neighbors, Pakistan.
Neil,
yeah, Pakistan.
Oh, blimey, England are having a really bad time. And the final match of the group stages sees India taking on Netherlands. Is this going to be the bad game, Anand?
This is the banana peel game. I'm going Dutch here. No, I'm kidding. India's going to make it.
India, Neil,
India.
In India for you. Right then. So that means India finish on 16, 12 points for New Zealand, 14 points for South Africa, 14 points for Australia. They are our semi-finalists. Fifth place would have been Pakistan, then Sri Lanka, then it would have been Afghanistan, and then bringing up the rear, depending on net run rates, at the bottom of the table, Bangladesh, Netherlands and England. But our semi-finalists would be the guys I've just mentioned there, and it would also mean that it would be India against Australia in a semi-final. Azim?
India.
Anand?
It's Wankhede, I'll go India.
And Neil?
Yeah, India.
India into the final. The other semi-final would have been New Zealand against South Africa. Neil?
Anand, is it Eden Gardens?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going South Africa.
South Africa for you. Azim?
South Africa.
So they're through to the final. What would you vote for, Anand?
Springboks. So I'm going South Africa as well.
Right. So India versus South Africa in the final. Who is going to win the final? Azim?
India.
I don't even need to ask the other two, do I? Neil?
Yeah, India.
And just for purposes of fairness, Anand?
Virat fields it for the six.
But what?
I mean, after dotting up for an over.
Just going through that actually shows that we're a long way to go yet.
Yeah.
Actually, like, just going through it, there's so much that can happen. And I know I've been critical of England and Pakistan. Actually, Pakistan, when they're like, especially Pakistan, when they've got literally, let's say, everyone's given up, they could do anything. England, it only takes one performance to really reignite them, because they have got memories of knowing how to do it. They are an aging team and stuff, but just going through that fixture list just makes you realize how long the tournament is and how it's designed in this way. So the top teams have more of a chance to make sure they go all the way. And that's another thing. I think the structure of the World Cups have got to change.
To what?
I think there's got to be where there's a bit more knockout. And if there is an upset, then it really puts your position. At the minute, if you lose a game, it's fine.
You know why that is, don't you? That all dates back to 2007, mate, when India lost and they got knocked out in the group stages and they can't afford to have India going out early. That's the only reason it's like it is now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I know that. And that's what I mean. But it's making for a game that's, a format that is designed to get the best teams towards the end. But if we're going to, again, you know, look at the wider picture within the game, it'll be way more exciting for us. So getting interested towards the end, we'd be interested from the offset if we knew that actually, you know, one slip up and you're really fighting against it.
Yeah. Afghanistan knocking out Pakistan today, for sake of argument, it'd have been an even bigger story, wouldn't it?
Yeah, Netherlands the other day, it would have meant a lot more, and it would have been, you know, it would have made a better spectacle. It might have made a little bit less money, but it would have made a better spectacle.
I should say thank you to Manscaped.com for their support of this podcast. They're our sponsors as we go through the Cricket World Cup. That brings us, gents, to the end of tonight's programme. I've nearly gone dead on an hour, which I'm quite impressed with. We don't usually do that, do we? Neil and Anand and Azeem, thank you very much indeed for joining me, gents, this evening. I will talk to you all soon, I am sure. And out there, everybody, thank you for watching. Stay tuned to the Cricket Badger podcast as we go through the rest of this Cricket World Cup. And we will see you again very soon indeed. Cheers, everybody.
Sports Social Podcast Network.